Nobody knew that healthcare could be so complicated.
Trump was a failure on healthcare.
Hundreds of thousands of black Americans lost healthcare insurance. That is outrageous.
And if he's president again, he would cancel insurance for millions more of us.
We cannot go back. President Biden and Vice President Harris have lowered healthcare premiums and expanded coverage for black families. They also capped the price of insulin at $35. Joe Biden is getting the job done for people just like me.
I'm Joe Biden, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Biden for President.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Time to turn our attention stateside, and Cal Thomas, nationally syndicated columnist, and Marion McKeown, US correspondent for the Business Post, are with us as always. Folks, a very good evening to you. I want to start with the debate that is happening, the first presidential debate between Joe Biden and Donald Trump, a bit earlier than we normally get them. Cal, normally when you watch a debate, you think we're looking for some electric bit of oratory from one of the candidates. We're looking for a blow to the other candidate. We're looking for some policies or some jokes that land. For Joe Biden, the stakes here are really making sure that he doesn't freeze or doesn't stumble.
Well, first, Ian, it's not really a debate. These haven't been debates in a long time. Real debates are something different. These are questions from the two presenters, one Jake Tapper and the other Dana Bash. Both of them have compared Trump on CNN to Hitler, of all things. I think it was a mistake for him to go ahead and do this, Trump, I mean. I think he should have done another venue and demanded that at least one of the presenters be somebody perhaps a little more favorable to him. I'm not saying to go as far as Sean Hannity, but a little more balance would be helpful. Look, both sides are preparing for this very well. The media hype has been extraordinary, something like our Super Bowl run-up, our national football game every February. So I think some estimates have said there may be as many as 200 million viewers worldwide, which would be just astounding. The Biden people have been preparing in case one or the other Trump shows up, either confused or slurring his word or attacking. But then the other side has been doing the same thing. So we'll see how it works out. But I don't think it's going to change many minds. People are pretty set in what their thinking is, and there are really only four or five states that matter in this election. Everyone else has pretty much decided who they're going to vote for.
Marion, will there be people in both the Democratic and increasingly the Republican Party be scrutinizing every single word by both candidates to make sure both of them are actually compos mentis?
Yeah, I think so. I think this is going to be a big feature of this debate, of the kind of debate watch parties that go on all over the states. Normally presidential debates, I think Cal's right, in the last couple of decades have become snooze fests, and they're also seem very staged. Like, we had Donald Trump with Hillary Clinton bringing in all of the women who claimed they had been assaulted by Bill Clinton. You know, Trump can't do those kind of stunts this time. I actually think the format this time round is much more sensible, because there's no crowd. You don't have any distractions of all the, you know, on either side, people cheering and jeering and interrupting and yelling over the candidates. This is really going to be much more, it should be more substantive, because as I said, without the crowds, without the stunts, with the mics being muted while one or other party isn't speaking. So if you're not speaking, your mic is muted. That's going to disadvantage Trump, because he loves to cut across his opponents, to bellow across them, to try and throw them off their game. So I think that, you know, Biden is apparently preparing quite carefully for this. He's been in Camp David. He's been doing the fake debate things and all that, while Trump's been out on the, the stump, making all kinds of weird allegations and claims and that don't sound that sensible. I think that all of his personalities will turn up at this. He'll have 90 minutes to be, you know, if he wants, calm and reasonable, or to be nasty and bullish. He'll probably try and do everything, but I think he's going to try to hit Biden hard. Biden has to prove, look, this is a set of, you pick the least lousy option. So on the one hand, you have a 78-year-old who is showing real signs, I think, of bizarre mental behavior. And on the other side, you have an 81-year-old who definitely is missing a step more than he was 4 years ago, who is not, does not seem as sharp or alert. Biden will be trying to do a reprise of his State of the Union address, where he really did perform very well. And Trump, of course, will be trying to just say, this guy's crazy, he's senile, he's got no business being president. We'll see what happens problems, but I disagree with Cal about the moderators. Jake Tapper and Dana Bash, the Hitler references came specifically from Trump using language like the Third Reich in his missives that he was sending out, and they noted that this was language that Hitler used. That is not comparing Trump to Hitler.
Cal, in a normal presidential debate, Joe Biden would point to his track record over the last 4 years and say that he has now managed to get inflation down, that there is jobs being created every day in America, the economy is growing faster than anywhere else in the world, the stock markets are at an all-time high, but it isn't a normal debate. He's debating Donald Trump. What does he have to do to win?
Well, first of all, he's made a lot of mistakes. He claimed when he came into office nearly 4 years ago that inflation was 9%. It wasn't. It was a little over 1%. He's made other kinds of claims that just factually are not true, regardless of your political position. And the same could be said in some areas about Donald Trump as well. I think Marion is right. He has to show up and prove that he is at least cognizant and competent, can finish sentences, doesn't act confused, drain off at the end of a sentence without completing it. And the expectations are so low for this event that if both of them just do moderately well, I think it will be considered a success by both parties. But, you know, the two sides are already lined up to say the other side is a failure, our side won, and they always do. I'd really like to see an old Oxford-style debate, or something going back to the Abraham Lincoln, Stephen Douglas debates, where somebody got up on a stage, introduced the two candidates, and they went at it for an hour and a half to 2 hours. People brought picnic baskets on the lawn to watch these events. There are transcripts of them. If you read them, they were incredibly substantive on issues that really matter. I think,
But people like the spectacle, people like the fights, people Biden the last time saying, "Won't you shut up, man?"
Well, as Marion said, with the muted mics this time, they're going to be shut up, but it's going to be because the microphones are off.
Could we get, Marion, the surprise announcement of Donald Trump's vice president? Would he take it out of the hat during the debate?
Donald Trump could probably do anything. I think if maybe as a distraction, if he feels that he's flailing. They've set this up. It's interesting because what's coming out of the Trump camp at the moment is Joe Biden is senile, and if he doesn't seem senile on the night, that's because he's taken a shedload of drugs. You know, so with Biden, if he performs well, he's on drugs. If he doesn't perform well, see, we told you he was senile. So that's the kind of setup there, which is, when you think about it, kind of astonishing. Trump is allegedly keeping his vice president pick for an announcement at the convention. Now, I don't know if that if it will be held out for that long. It's an interesting list. Well, when I say interesting, I mean it's actually quite a dull and impressive list. So I'm surprised. Like there, I don't see any contenders on it that are going to set the world on fire or really make that much of a difference. But that's Donald Trump's choice. And you know, again with Donald Trump, he loves to do this, like it's The Apprentice and the suspense, and he's playing it out. He may pick somebody totally different from the four or five names that keep cropping up.
Cal, some of the names on the list, I'll just read a couple of them out here. You've got J.D. Vance, who is a senator, but is best known for writing the best-selling book, Hillbilly Elegy. And I think it might be fair to say he's even more MAGA in his views than Donald Trump. You've got Elise Stefanik, who hit the headlines a couple of months ago when she pretty much got the presidents of two universities fired after they turned up at a congressional committee. You've got Marco Rubio, who didn't Donald Trump and him have a row? These are just some of the names.
Right. Well, during the last presidential election, or two ago, Trump referred to Marco as Little Marco and insulted him. But this is politics. You know, everything can be forgiven in politics. Let's not forget that Kamala Harris basically accused Biden of being a racist, and wound up on the ticket anyway. So all can be forgiven. The old state balance is probably no longer in play, where a president who is associated with one state wants to pick a vice presidential candidate from another state to balance the electoral prospects. But I think there are several good people in there. Tim Scott was early mentioned on, the African-American senator from South Carolina. incredibly articulate, a very, very fine man. And I think with the young black vote especially trending toward Trump, that he would be an ideal pick. But as Marion says, with Trump, all things are possible and probably probable.
Marion, is one potential strategy, a winning strategy for Democrats in this election, to look at something that worked well during the midterms back in 2022, which is the outrage that the Supreme Court decision in the Roe versus Wade case, or effectively the Jackson healthcare case, had, which effectively outlawed abortion in many states, and the Democrats seem to get a lift on that. It's 2 years on from it. Is this something they can lean into?
I think so. You know, there are a couple of big issues in this election. Immigration is one, but certainly the whittling away of women's rights and the Supreme Court decisions on a number of issues is another, and abortion is at the forefront of that. The White House is staging 50 different events to mark the two-year anniversary of this Supreme Court decision. It has literally thrown the law in America into chaos. You have 50 different states with 50 different outcomes. The cruelty that and the suffering of women in some states has been just appalling. And I think that this is something that Donald Trump, I don't know how he's going to defend this on during the debate if he is pinned to an answer by the moderators, because, you know, it depends on where he is. When he's talking to a Christian crowd, he pumps his chest and says, look what I did, I got rid of Roe v. Wade, you know, aren't I great? And then when he's talking to a less so crowd, he tries to be a little more ambivalent and won't be sort of pinned down on whether he thinks there should be a national abortion ban or not. So I think it's going to be, you know, he's going to be hopefully required to elaborate what exactly his view is on this. I mean, of course, it's like nailing jelly to a wall. He'd slither around it anyway. But I think that, you know, these are the things I think that potential voters, the undecided voters, really want to know about. And I think a lot of voters who are watching this, they call them double haters here. They're voters who make up a really big proportion of the voting electorate. They don't like Biden and they don't like Trump, and they want to know who they like less by the end of the evening. Like, which, as I said, is the least lousy option. I think they'll be looking at all these kinds of things during the debate.
Yeah, we used to be talking about the lesser of two evils. Now I think we're talking about the evil of two lessers.
Something familiar to Irish listeners as well from that reference about politics back here. Listen, Callum Marion are sticking with us. We'll be talking more about Donald Trump, how he claimed that Joan Rivers, the comedian, voted for him when she'd been dead for 2 years. And we'll also get their take on that big news that broke earlier on this morning, that Julian Assange, who had been threatened with extradition to the United States over the WikiLeaks cable saga many years ago, he has been effectively freed. We'll get their take on that. Cal, I'm pretty sure you would have been a Joan Rivers fan, wouldn't you?
I did know her, yes, pretty well, actually near the end of her life. And, you know, we have a saying at the founding of America, no taxation without representation. We have something called a death tax in America. I don't know if you have it in Ireland, where they tax your estate after you die. So I think you ought to be able to cast your ballot at least once after you die. It's only fair.
And Donald Trump seems to believe that Joan Rivers cast hers for him.
Well, yeah, that's pretty crazy, I must say. But you can only laugh at it like so many of the other things Trump and other politicians say. It's really ridiculous.
Marion, I do want to move on. So, this is probably even more extraordinary than claiming that Joan Rivers had voted for him 2 years after she died. But Dana White, who is the pretty much founder of UFC, which is, of course, massive in the United States, massive over here, and Donald Trump, being the bit of a showman, had a proposal for Dana White.
That's right. And, you know, just on the Joan Rivers thing, Trump also claimed Princess Diana wanted to date him. He also claimed Madonna was stalking him. You know, I mean, the guy, he's unhinged when it comes to anything to do with women, as far as I can see, and delusional. But this is, to me, much more serious and something that really merits more of a discussion. In this election cycle, Trump's violent rhetoric has just been escalating on a near weekly basis. I get all these emails that are sent out to everyone, and there's all talk about bloodbath. He's talking about wheeling out the guillotine. He's talking about, you know, it's just appalling rhetoric. And this, to me, is just sickening, because it really dehumanizes migrants. He's saying, you know, that they should start a sports league for these illegal migrants to fight each other. And, you know, oh, they're all tough, they come from prisons. And, you know, suggesting that this be some kind of a spectacle know, for what? For the consumption of the American public, and that then the winner could go on and fight the UFC person. It's disgusting. It, as I said, it's just this violent dehumanization of migrants. And to me, it's appalling. And I think that there should be more outrage about this. Like the other stuff, the Joan Rivers stuff, people could care less about. It's mildly amusing. But this is not. This is not. And he's saying this, you know, at a conference for Christian values. And that, you know, he's getting these are applause lines at these kind of events is really worrying.
Cal, how big is immigration going to play in this election?
Well, the polls show it's among the top of concerns of Americans, and not just for the migrants coming in, but the drugs, the fentanyl, which is killing tens of thousands of young people, not reported as much as it has before. I mean, if you look at the pictures of people pouring over the border, it used to be because they wanted refuge from persecution in their own countries. Now some of them have been interviewed. The huge numbers of Chinese, by the way, are coming in, and they're saying they're coming here for jobs, are coming here for income and other things. The fact is that the laws are being broken. Now, Joe Biden said for three and a half years, that he couldn't do anything about it unless some kind of bipartisan bill was passed by Congress. Then all of a sudden, he starts issuing executive orders, which, by the way, are not having much of an effect. And he's discovered a power he claimed not to have for 3.5 years. So it's right up near the top, along with the economy, the illegal immigration, and I think it's going to play a role depending on how the issue is framed by both candidates going toward November.
I want to turn to something a bit more serious topic now, Marion. That is the news that came out overnight, our time, would have come very early morning, your time, which is that Julian Assange, the co-founder of WikiLeaks, who had either been in prison for the last 5 years, and before that he had been holed up in the Ecuadorian embassy in London for, I think it was 7 years, an agreement with US prosecutors that will see him plead guilty to one charge, and that will effectively allow him to walk free, and he'll return to Australia where he is a citizen, and the Australian government have been lobbying the US government for his release. He is a controversial figure in the US. Why have they pursued him to such an extent that we are now looking, I think it must be, what, 14 or 15 years since the original WikiLeaks release?
Yeah, the original release, my God, it was, what, 250,000 confidential diplomatic cables back in the early 2010 that had a devastating effect on the Obama's foreign policy. There were all these cables released about fights with Germany, you know, just Pakistan issues about their nuclear. It was like what was released, and it was all of the cables were. They were reported in full by the American media, the contents, because they were seen as of very significant interest. Now, Assange in America is as polarizing almost as Trump. You had Robert F. Kennedy coming out and saying he's a hero, and that if he becomes president, he's going to build a statue to him in Washington, D.C. Well, I don't think there's any danger of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. becoming president anyway, so we'll be waiting a while for that statue. But then you have the CIA and the Pentagon, they all want Assange to be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. They said that the leaks endangered lives, they endangered sources, they endangered, you know, all U.S. troops in overseas missions. So they really did want to see him brought here and imprisoned for another number of years. I think the American government at the end of the day and the Department of Justice really just wanted to shut with this. They wanted to try and find an elegant solution. It's been dragging on forever. And I think they thought, okay, we can save 5 years in prison, time already served in a different jurisdiction. But it's interesting to me that, you know, it seems like Assange almost called the shots on this, that the deal is going to be signed off on in Saipan, which is kind of an American territory. He was going, I'm not coming to the States. You know, you can meet me halfway, and that's near to Australia. So it seems to be almost convenient for him. And as I said, to me, it's an indication that the American government just wants to shut at the whole thing. Mike Pence came out and said it was a disgrace. A number of other conservatives came out and said it was a disgrace. But then you had Marjorie Taylor Greene applauding it, the decision, and a whole bunch of other people doing the same thing. You know, I think it's a bit of a Rorschach test, depending on what way you look at deep state, what way you look at national security, etc., what your response is.
Cal, leave aside the personality of Julian Assange, and there are all sorts of other issues with Julian Assange which people can talk about, and other, but for the core issue here of what he released and what WikiLeaks released and what the whistleblowers released to Julian Assange, it needed to come out.
Well, again, I think Marion is right. It depends on your perspective. I go back to the days as a reporter during the Daniel Ellsberg Pentagon Papers release to the New York Times and Washington Post. The Nixon administration filed a lawsuit, and it was overruled by the Supreme Court, and the newspapers won Pulitzer Prizes for doing it. The difference between that, which was the government lying to us about the Vietnam War and decisions made during that period and body counts and casualty figures, and the Julian Assange thing, is that it did reveal certain embarrassing cables and other things that did potentially, and maybe actually, we really don't know, put lives at risk. So the government likes to stamp so many things secret to keep information from the public. Generally, as a journalist for all of my life, I'm interested in what they're trying to hide. But as an American citizen, I'm also interested in the American role in the world and on some of our agents, the CIA, the FBI, and other places that might be put in danger by the release of these things. So it's a difficult balance.
Before we let you go, both of you, the debate is on Thursday night at 9 p.m. and it's going to last a couple of hours because they're putting ad breaks in it. Will both of you make it towards to the end of it?
Well, I certainly will, because I have to. I don't know about Marion.
Normally you get to turn up at these things and go to the spin room, and it's actually quite a lot of fun. But this one, as I said, is being conducted differently, so I will be watching it at a Trump debate watch party. And you know what, I think people are looking forward to it. I mean, we're curious. I think Cal will agree, to see how this turns out. So much is riding on it. You know, it may be a dull, damp squib where they're both overly cautious, but there should be some fireworks, and you know, that's, let's hope so.
Well, Marion is going to be amongst the MAGA crowd. Where are you going to be, Cal, watching it?
Well, I'm going to be in, or I am, in Sicily. I'm over here doing a fact-finding mission, which means I can write it off of my income tax.
Perfect.
But what I'd really like to know, Ian, is how much CNN is charging for the ads. With a potential audience of 200 million, I'll bet it's top dollar.
And they certainly need the money right now, given the way their audience has gone since Donald Trump was last in office. Right. Cal Thomas, enjoy Sicily. I'm sure you'll be watching the debate with something nice and cold and white in your hand. And Marion McKeown, enjoy the MAGA lot. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today FM.
Nobody knew that healthcare could be so complicated.
Trump was a failure on healthcare.
Hundreds of thousands of black Americans lost healthcare insurance. That is outrageous.
And if he's president again, he would cancel insurance for millions more of us.
We cannot go back. President Biden and Vice President Harris have lowered healthcare premiums and expanded coverage for black families. They also capped the price of insulin at $35. Joe Biden is getting the job done for people just like me.
I'm Joe Biden, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Biden for President.